Good evening. This is a public hearing regarding pest management activities on city properties. The date is Tuesday, August 12th. The time is 5:18 p.m. Please note that the ringing of cell phones, pagers, and similar devices can still happen virtually and is still prohibited. Please ensure your device is silent. Public comment will be available for each item on the agenda. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Opportunities to speak during the public comment period are available via phone by calling 1-415-655-0001, entering the access code 2660-830-8077 and entering the password CCSF. That's CCSF. When connected, dial *3 to be added to the queue. Best practices are to call from a quiet location, speak clearly and slowly, and turn down any devices. Alternatively, you may submit public comment by email to the Department's Policy and Public Affairs Assistant Coordinator at environment@sfgov.org. Comments submitted via email will be posted on the department website. It will be included as part of the official file. My name is Deidre Tannenberg, Policy and Public Affairs Assistant Coordinator at the San Francisco Environment Department. I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Shoba Iyer, Integrated Pest Management Program Coordinator, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department. With that, we could proceed to item two. Item two, presentation on current citywide integrated pest management, IPM initiatives, and pesticide use trends. Speakers, Shoba Iyer, Integrated Pest Management Program Manager, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department. Discussion. Shoba, the floor is all yours.
Great. Thank you, Deidre. I'll wait for the slides to come up, and while that's happening, I'll say hi to everyone. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to our annual public hearing regarding pest management activities on San Francisco city-owned properties in the 2024 calendar year. We can move to the next slide, please. So there are three of us currently working on SF Environment's Integrated Pest Management, or IPM, team. As Deidre mentioned, my name is Shoba Iyer, and I'm the IPM Program Manager here at SFE. In my role at SFE, I work on both IPM as well as our Buy Green program, in which we work with city departments to choose greener, more sustainable options in different product categories. I'm very pleased to introduce my teammates here, Gabriel Hernandez and Jerry Medina. I'll let you both briefly introduce yourselves, first Gabriel and then Jerry.
Yes, thank you, Shoba. Hello, everyone. Gabriel Hernandez here. Thank you for being with us. I am one of the IPM program analysts here at SF Environment, and I've been in this role for a little over 2 years. And yeah, thank you all for being here. I will pass it to you, Jerry.
Yes, good evening, everyone. My name is Jerry, or Geraldine Jerry, go by Jerry. And I joined the department back in June. So I've been here just a little over 2 months. And I am also working on our IPM program, as well as the Buy Green program that Shoba mentioned earlier. I'm very excited to be in this role. I am coming from a background in environmental health and in specifically working in asthma, healthy schools, healthy housing from a public health institute on the East Coast.
Great. Thank you, Gabriel and Jerry. Again, welcome to everyone joining us today. Per Section 310 of the IPM Ordinance, SF Environment holds an annual noticed public meeting at which issues related to pest management activities on city-owned property are considered. Any city department or contractor granted an exemption to use pesticide products not on the reduced risk pesticide list will explain why the exemption was sought and what actions the department or contractor has taken under the exemption. Any city department or contractor using the highest risk pesticide products included on the reduced risk pesticide list shall explain the reasons for using such products and how they have been used. This hearing affords an opportunity for the public to learn about the activities of the city's IPM program. It is also a venue for the city's IPM professionals to hear public comments and concerns about pest management activities on City of San Francisco owned properties. Please note that the webpage that is announcing this public hearing, that has links to the meeting documents, including the slides being presented right now, a staff memo, and a summary of pesticide use exemptions granted in 2024. So if you go to our website, sfenvironment.org, and click on the link that says events at the top, you'll see a list of events, including a link to this public hearing. You can click on that and access PDFs of the meeting documents there. Next slide, please. This is our agenda for today's hearing. I'm going to provide you with a brief introduction to integrated pest management and describe what our program has been up to over this last year. Gabriel will describe the overall pesticide use trends on city properties in the 2024 calendar year. Then we'll have time for public comment. In our third agenda item, we'll have a chance to hear from representatives of city departments who, during the 2024 calendar year, have either been using what we consider the most restricted pesticides or were granted exemptions from the usual restrictions on pesticides. Under the IPM ordinance, city departments are required to explain these actions at this public hearing. Then we'll have time for public comment on agenda item number 3, and we'll also have time for general public comment as agenda item number 4. Following that, we'll adjourn the hearing. Next slide, please. Let me provide an overview on integrated pest management, or IPM. So here in San Francisco, there are a number of pests on city-owned properties that can pose harm to public health and the environment. For example, we have rodents and mosquitoes, which can be disease vectors. Rodents can also cause structural damage. We also have invasive plants, such as French broom, which is on the California Department of Food and Agriculture's list of noxious weeds. And we also have Himalayan blackberry as another example. Invasive plants like these are a concern because of the disruptive effects they can have on native plant and animal communities, vegetation structure, and economic impact. Luckily, there are a lot of ways that we can manage what we consider to be pests. We view pests as organisms that are considered undesirable or problematic in a certain place. So what we're showing here on this slide is a pyramid of the IPM decision-making process. This is the process we apply here in San Francisco. This pyramid shows a hierarchy of approaches for managing pests. At the foundation, what you'll see is design and maintenance of landscapes and buildings. And this is how we can prevent pests in the first place. Sealing up cracks, holes, and entry points for rodents and insects is an example of prevention. When we need to implement controls, we prefer to implement physical mechanical controls that don't have disruptive effects on public health or ecosystems. Hand pulling weeds or using rodent traps are examples of physical mechanical controls we can use. Going farther up the pyramid, there may be biological controls that can be used. And one example of this is pheromone traps for insects. Pheromones are chemicals that insects release to communicate with each other, so they can be used to bait sticky traps as a biological control. And using chemical pesticides is a last resort. For situations where it's necessary to use chemical pesticides, we at SFE screen out the higher risk chemicals and restrict how they are used. Next slide, please. Our pest management practices emphasize prevention. This is really the basis of IPM and where we start. There are a lot of buildings and landscapes where we can design the pests out, or at least make the spaces much more resistant to pest infestations. Next slide, please. I'd like to share with you some of the core activities our IPM team has been up to over the course of this past year. One of those activities is our public IPM meeting series. We have been holding these meetings virtually on a mostly monthly basis. The top left photo is a visual of some of our participants from one of our virtual meetings. On the top right, we had a hybrid in-person meeting. So for these meetings, we identify featured speakers and some of the topics these speakers have shared with us recently include habitat restoration for rare plants, rodent management, and pollinator gardens. These meetings provide good forums for IPM professionals to share tips and guidance on how to manage pest problems while limiting or avoiding the use of harmful pesticides. Next slide, please. We've also continued to convene annual IPM trainings for city departments. You can see photos here from our trainings over the year for the Public Utilities Commission, Rec and Parks, and Department of Public Works. Various topics are covered in these trainings. In this last year, I've heard sessions on native and invasive plant identifications and IPM to manage aquatic weeds. This year, I'll add that we also got a new citywide professional services contract in place for structural IPM service on city-owned properties. This was a close collaboration over many months between SF Environment and the city's Office of Contract Administration, as well as other departments who utilize these services. We included requirements from the IPM ordinance in that contract language so that we incentivize the selection of a contractor who has experience with and will apply the IPM approach when conducting service calls for city departments. We're also looking forward to doing more field trips and seeing more of the spaces where the city's IPM specialists are operating so our SFE team can continue to grow our knowledge and understanding of the pest problems and IPM work going on city properties. Next slide, please. I'm showing you here some of the requirements under the IPM ordinance. Again, IPM is defined as the use of all available methods in an integrated fashion to ideally prevent and control or manage pests. And it's based on the identification and biology of the pests. It considers chemical pesticide controls as the last resort. Our ordinance requires that this IPM approach is used in all pest control activities. It also provides restrictions on chemical pesticides, and that is captured in our reduced risk pesticide list, which is updated annually. For more details on that, I invite you to attend the Commission on the Environment meeting on September 22nd, where the reduced risk pesticide list will be an agenda item. We update this list annually, and we look for safer alternatives for each pest issue. The ordinance also allows for pesticide use exemptions from the reduced risk pesticide list for special circumstances, and that's another purpose for this hearing today, because any department that is granted an exemption has to explain it here. There are requirements for advance posting at the areas that are going to be treated with herbicides. We keep records of all pesticides used on city properties, and that includes compliance from both city departments as well as any contractors on city properties. And as I mentioned, the ordinance requires this annual public hearing. When I think on what I've learned about the IPM practices in San Francisco during the 3 years I've been working here with SFE, I see that in practice, we prefer non-chemical methods of control. And some examples are using physical barriers to prevent pests in the first place, organizing volunteer groups to hand pull weeds. And despite some of these efforts, there are some situations that cannot be controlled by physical means. One example is controlling poison oak along park trails where it's a hazard for park users. There are also some steep slopes where it isn't possible to mechanically control invasive weeds, so herbicides may need to be used for vegetation management in those cases. And there are some areas where it's critical to kill a plant by the roots because it's jeopardizing the foundation to a structure or pipelines or dams. Next slide, please. We screen every pesticide that is added to the reduced risk pesticide list. The process we use to do this is publicly available on our website in a document titled San Francisco's Pesticide Hazard Screening Protocol. We use tier rankings, tiers 1, 2, and 3. Tier 1 pesticides are the highest hazard and usually the highest priority for replacement with a safer alternative. So these tiers have helped set our focus on which products to try and replace. Next slide, please. I'll talk now about pesticide exemptions. Exemption requests can be submitted to us by city departments or contractors asking us to use a pesticide that is not on the reduced risk pesticide list. Although I have the number of exemption requests that we received in 2024 shown here, know that we don't really view the number of exemptions we receive each year as a metric of success. If we had a very large number of exemptions coming in, we would think that our reduced risk pesticide list is too restrictive. And if we had a very small number of exemptions coming in, we'd wonder if we were exercising enough caution in our reduced risk pesticide list. In 2024, we received 3 regular exemption requests. We received 20 trial use exemptions, which are often for new products that are being tested out to determine their efficacy in addressing a pest issue. And we received 5 emergency exemptions. Emergency exemptions are typically for situations that are threats to public health or might otherwise lead to significant damage. The emergency exemptions submitted in 2024 were for situations when a department used a product that is not on the reduced risk pesticide list, nor did they request an exemption in advance. In total, we received 28 exemption requests in 2024. I am going to turn it over to Gabriel now to speak a bit on our pesticide use trends data.
Thank you, Shoba, for that. And you can go to the next slide, Deidre, please. Thank you. So we prepared a few slides that will show some pesticide use trend data. This information is publicly available on the SF Environment website. So here's the URL on the slide. Additionally, you can get to this URL by Googling SF Environment IPM, and then you can click on pesticide use trends. That will get you to the part of the webpage that looks like this, where there's a where at the bottom on the slide here, and you can click on the hyperlink behind the word here, and that phrase, view the latest data here. I'm mentioning this in case you would like to check this out as I go through these next slides. So with that, we can go to the next slide, please. So here is a graph of all pesticide use citywide from the years 2010 to 2024. The horizontal axis of the graph shows you the year, and the vertical axis shows you the pounds of pesticides applied. You can see the tier 3, or least hazardous, pesticide use reflected by the dotted green line. The tier 2, or more hazardous, pesticides are reflected by the dashed pink line. And the tier 1, or most hazardous, pesticides are reflected by the solid purple line. You can see that there has been a dramatic decrease in tier 1 pesticide use at city properties over the years. The decrease in tier 1 pesticide use over since comparative to 2024 is about a 99% reduction. Additionally, you'll see that there has been a rise in tier 3 pesticide use in the last few years, and that is because a larger amount of a safer product often may be required to effectively replace a tier 1 product. And tier 3 pesticides are usually food grade products like essential oils or soaps and microbials. So with this is the end of our presentation for this agenda item, and I'll pass it back to Deidre.
Love my husband. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press star 3 to be added to the queue. For those who are already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it is your turn to speak. I will pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. Hello, caller, you are unmuted. Your 3 minutes begin now.
I have a question. I submitted a comment, and looking at the documentations, there are only two, and mine is not included. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, so you actually, I have a combined attachment of public comment item number 2 on the webpage that shows 2 comments in that.
But I sent mine, which is not included, and it was sent Sunday evening, and it's not there.
I received public comments. All public comments I received on our webpage, and I believe item number 4, public comment item number 2 is, in fact, in the on the webpage.
It was. I sent it on Sunday evening. I sent it on Sunday evening, and it's not included.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's one thing. And so another thing, I just will say quickly what I want to say. The spraying continues. You keep using herbicides, toxic herbicides, to eliminate plants. Those plants are not danger to anything and anybody, and the herbicides are. I don't know any family who doesn't have cancer, either immediately or like sister, brother, whatever, everybody. Every single person. And the main things for those is contamination, chemical contamination. And you keep contaminating the park for some reason, for those blessed native plants, which should be abandoned. It should be completely abandoned. In Natural Resource Department, their most anti-environmental things you have in San Francisco. They use 85% of all the high toxicity, high hazard herbicides on one third of the land. And our parks, like, they're toxic dams, basically. Thank you very much. I hope it can be stopped, and I hope you stop it. It's really awful. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And I do have a total of 3 public comments on our webpage. We have 1 from Mary McAllister, Anastasia Clickstern, San Francisco Forest Alliance. And on the webpage of the meeting, you'll see public comment number 1 and public comment number 2. And public comment number 2 has 2 public comments attached in there. Thank you for your comment. See no further callers in the queue. Public comment on this item is closed. With that, we can proceed to item 3, presentation by representatives from city departments that requested pesticide exemptions or used pesticides on the most restricted list in calendar year 2024. Speaker Shoba I, Integrated Pest Management Program Manager, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department, San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, San Francisco Department of Recreation and Parks, San Francisco Department of Public Works, San Francisco International Airport, Treasure Island Development Authority, and PestTech. Explanatory documents, staff memo, and summary of pesticide use exceptions granted for San Francisco City operation. Informational presentation and discussion only. Gabriel, I'll put up the slide in a moment and get back to you.
Sharks. And then we'll go to the next slide, and then Shoba will actually be starting us off for this portion.
Thank you very much. Great. So with this agenda item, these are presentations by city department representatives that requested pesticide exemptions or used pesticides on the most restricted list in the 2024 calendar year. What you're seeing here is Tier 1 herbicide use by the Public Utilities Commission, specifically applied within the city. These are data for the Central Distribution Division of the Public Utilities Commission. So on this slide and on the next few slides, we'll be showing graphs that focus on Tier 1 herbicide use specifically, as opposed to pesticide use overall. And the reason for that is because herbicide use has been of particular interest by the public in past years. We unfortunately do not have a representative from PUC in the city joining us tonight, so I'll provide some brief comments in lieu of that. PUC, based here in the city, has not applied any Tier 1 herbicides in 2022, 2023, or 2024. You can see from these last few years, their Tier 1 herbicide use has been low or zero, and they did not submit any pesticide exemptions in 2024 either. We can go to the next slide. So now we'll go to the Public Utilities Commission Alameda Watershed. The Alameda Watershed submitted one pesticide exemption in 2024. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Charlie Starton to speak about their use of the most restricted pesticides and the exemption they submitted in 2024. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hi. Yes. So we submitted an exemption request for product Sidekick. The intention for this exemption was to do a trial experiment to see if we could eliminate stinkwort with the lowest amount of herbicide possible. So Sidekick is an adjuvant. It is 100% delimiting. And our experiment was to try to see if a botanical non-ionic surfactant may replace several surfactants that have been used in the past. This product is also an acidifier and can be used to buffer high pH water to aid in the reduction of weak acid herbicides. It's labeled for both aquatic and terrestrial use. And that is the reason we applied for this exemption, to test our success in eliminating specific species Dendrobium stinkwort. I can talk a little bit about my work on the Alameda Watershed. It's approximately 40,000 acres encompassing Alameda and Santa Clara County. We work with contractors and consultants to manage weeds throughout the property. And we have rangelands that are also in our IPM program. And last year, we discovered that our efforts to decrease barb gograss through mowing, timed mowing. We're limited. We are not trying to use herbicides for that. This is a species that can be very damaging to cattle. And so we would like to eradicate it. So our intentions for 2026 are to implement a controlled burn if possible. We have had a lot of success in reducing many weeds on our property through manual and mechanical removal. At times, we do need to use herbicides based on the structure of the plant, for example, fennel and woody plants, plants with deep tap roots, where manual removal would actually cause more damage to the soil and potentially introduce more weeds. All right, our focus now is to conserve and protect high value habitats. And following our vegetation management plan, according to the SF IPM ordinance.
You lose Charlie's audio?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Charlie.
Oh, great.
It paused for a while.
Okay, sorry about that. So, in our property, we take a proactive approach to prevent weeds through decontamination of vehicles and equipment, and use an integrated approach, manual and mechanical efforts, ideally. And there are times that we do use herbicides, and the regulatory compliance states, especially because we have aquatic mitigation measures, we use buffers restricting the use of herbicides near streams and sensitive habitats, including California yellow-legged frog and California salamander. And I will say that over the past decade or so, seen a dramatic reduction in a lot of our high priority weeds. And our focus is switching to early detection, rapid response, as well as rangeland IPM, and working to use an integrated approach. I think that covers it.
Great. Thanks so much, Charlie. We can move to the next slide. Next, we'll hear from the Public Utilities Commission at the Peninsula Watershed The Peninsula Watershed submitted 5 pesticide exemptions in 2024. We did truncate the exemption information on this slide and in some of the subsequent slides in order to get all the rows to fit in the presentation. So I'll remind everyone that you can access the summary of pesticide use exemptions document on the webpage for this hearing, which contains the complete exemption information, and you can zoom in and view as you like. So I will turn it over next to my colleague Matt Swagler to speak about the PUC Peninsula's use of the most restricted pesticides and the exemptions they submitted.
All right. Hey, everybody. Can you hear me?
Sounds good. Yep.
Cool. I'll do the exemptions first. So Vaquero, less than 1% of our original grasslands remain. Serpentine soil is a smaller subset of that, and fountain thistle only occurs in seeps. So we have a federally listed plant that's surrounded by non-native perennial grasses. Vaquero is a grass-specific herbicide piloted to reduce the risk of non-target impacts when controlling weeds. It wasn't particularly effective, and it looks like the consultant decided not to use it this year. He was able to do his work carefully with Roundup and Clearcast, so I don't anticipate that we'll renew this exemption. Cayuse Plus acts like a mild fertilizer, increases herbicide uptake in target plants. So sadly, our department ran out of funds way earlier than we anticipated, so we were not able to purchase this last year. I would still like to purchase and try this out, so I will put in another exemption request and do that. Rainier EA, same story, wasn't able to get it. This is a true non-ionic surfactant. So the main one we use is competitor that spreads the herbicide out over the plant leaf and helps it get good contact. Certain herbicides work better with a non-ionic surfactant. So this particular product has a really good environmental profile. It's labeled for aquatic use and streams and stuff. So we would like to try that out. I think it's going to work well. We have one for Garlon 4. This product was removed from the list, and the exemption was to use up existing stocks, which we did. So we won't need to request that again. And then we have one for Vastland. This product is on the list, and the use limitation specifically refers to use on high priority weeds. In the absence of fire and grazing, much of our grassland conservation is to control native shrubs. So we put the exemption request so that we could use this product on native vegetation. This will be an ongoing need, so we'll discuss revising the language on the list for the next round. And this product is a lower tier then Roundup, and we were able to substitute this for Roundup for a lot of the woody vegetation control that we're doing. Now I will talk about the tier one pesticides that we used. First one is Roundup Custom. So to just back it up, many organic products are contact herbicides. So these damage above ground growth of plants, but many weeds have root storage and can quickly rebound. Systemic herbicides kill plants to the roots. Of the systemic herbicides on the list, only Clearcast, Polaris, and Roundup are effective against dicots, which are plants that germinate with two leaves, as opposed to monocots, grasses. So if you're trying to control grasses, those are the only three options that we have that work well. Clearcast and Polaris can be useful in diverse grasslands, but can also have residual effects. This isn't acceptable when working around rare plants. We don't want to have any kind of impact on future germination of those plants. So Roundup binds to the soil, breaks down quickly, and doesn't have residual effects. And these qualities make it a critical tool for our conservation work. We are committed to using other herbicides on the list whenever they're effective, and also using non-chemical techniques whenever it's appropriate for the project. More on that later. Next for our tier one list is Avenger Weed Killer. The gardeners at the Pulgus Water Temple were using Avenger to control weeds in the landscaping, mostly like dandelions. Since it is a contact herbicide, many of the targets were able to resprout. I trained them to use Polaris at a low rate. That's a tier two, and they have been using that instead of Avenger, and that's been working well for them. And then Garlon 4 Ultra is a tier one that we use this year. Like I said before, this was removed from the list, and we put in an exemption to just use up the jug that we had. So we also have PT Wasp Freeze. We occasionally have wasp nests in areas where they're potentially hazardous to staff and trail users. We use a small amount of Wasp Freeze as an initial knockdown before treating it with Suspend Polyzone, which is the next one. That's a residual insecticide. It does not have a knockdown effect, and it takes a few days to control wasps. So the effort is a lot safer for the person on the ground to do a quick spray of the Wasp Freeze, kind of keeps them from coming after you. And then a couple days after putting out the suspend, we can cover it up, and it's usually a done deal. So, talking about IPM, at the Peninsula Watershed, we're managing weeds around rare plants at sites kind of scattered throughout 23,000 acres. I would say the most meaningful IPM contribution is developing an early detection rapid response program where we schedule surveys along roads and infrastructure for occurrences of weeds that are new to the area or not widespread within a particular site. So trying to catch those, oh, there's just one of this plant here, or even better, it hasn't been seen in this county before. We're in touch with the local weed management area group, and we kind of share a list and study flashcards so that we have even a chance at recognizing it, because a lot of times we haven't even seen it before. So controlling challenging weeds before they have a chance to get established is one of our core philosophies, and it's an efficient way to use resources and reduce pesticide use. Also, in the spirit of IPM, we keep a close eye on phenology and choose the most effective method for the moment. For example, we manage many acres of yellow star thistle in sensitive grasslands. So we'll do a rare plant survey ahead of time to make sure there's nothing, precious right there. And if we have an area where we know the plant is, we'll spot spray it with a low dilution of herbicide when it's very small, and that'll control it. When it's just starting to flower, we'll do two separate sessions of mowing. So that's mowing the same area 6 weeks apart. After it's in full bloom, we'll use a hedger to cut it low, which minimizes soil disturbance, and we'll actually bag the plants out. We'll have like a box truck come and just shove it in there because asters will still go to seed after you cut them. They're really resilient. In some situations, mowing alone works very well. Last year, we were able to reduce herbicide use on dense stands of French broom by hedging them first. A lot of those plants were many years old, so over half of them didn't resprout from the cut stem without using herbicide. And we were able to spot spray resprouts and germinating seedlings when the desirable plants were dormant in the fall. So that's what I have. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you, Matt. We can move to the next slide. Next, we'll hear from Joy Malera, who's with the Public Utilities Commission at Hetch Hetchy Water and Power, and she'll be talking about their use of the most restricted pesticides. They did not submit any pesticide exemptions in 2024.
Hi, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So to give you a small system overview of the Hetch Hetchy system, we supply the water for the most part to San Francisco. So our assets extend from Hetch Hetchy Reservoir in Yosemite National Park all the way down to Newark Substation in Fremont. The assets that we control include pipelines, 5 work camps, powerhouses, distribution and transmission lines, and of course, a bunch of water transmission lines. We operate through Tier 3 extreme fire risk areas. So wildfire mitigation is a large component of our pesticide use. As Shoba said, we filed no exemptions for 2024. Our use of Tier 1, we had 177 applications made. These were used in areas where bare ground soil is mandated by public resource codes and electrical codes for high voltage facilities. These include switchyards, powerhouses, certain wood poles and transmission towers. So, some of the things that we're working on to reduce our Tier 1 use is we have a few projects going on at Hetch Hetchy, including the replacement of 4292 PRC code, 4292 wood poles, and non-exempt equipment. This type of equipment has the ability to create sparks if the failure occurs, and this is on distribution lines in high fire areas. For these poles, we have to clear to bare ground 10 feet around each pole, and this is a high use of our Tier 1 products. This project began late 2024, and every pole that we eliminate the non-exempt equipment on will eliminate the need to spray Tier 1 around it. So we have about 50 plus poles upcountry in the Forest Service, Stanislaus Forest, and Yosemite Park Service. And this would also reduce overall wildfire risk upcountry. We also have a pilot program in process for Cambistat, a herbicide that we had added to the list a couple years ago. We've had a little delay in ordering the equipment and getting the pesticide stocked, but our pilot has began. So we're currently selecting trees that would otherwise need to be cut down or giving unaesthetic trims to comply with electrical code regulations. So this will be done with a soil injection, and it'll reduce growth and increase blooms on trees that bloom. If we were to cut these trees down and not use Cambistat, we would probably, if they're resprouting species, use a cut step treatment to stop the regrowth. So Cambistat's a hormonal herbicide, so using that over a cut stump treatment would be beneficial. As Shoba mentioned earlier, Hetch Hetchy has a massive problem with poison oak, not so much for visitors, but actually for our workers. So we have a crew of about 15 summer watershed workers that were consistently exposed to poison oak. These people weed eat about 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 6 months or so upcountry to reduce our wildfire risk. And they give us numerous OSHA recordable injuries. So many times these guys have to go in and get the cortisone shots in the hospital. So this is a big issue for Hetch Hetchy. So in 2024, we started an initiative to create a standard operating procedure that includes herbicides and mastication to start controlling the poison oak that specifically these summer watershed workers are exposed to. And we're working with natural resources to create this SOP so that we can spray closer to the watersheds than we were before, utilizing correct weather conditions and water levels and everything like that. So to touch on a little bit of our IVM program and the ways that we're trying to reduce overall herbicide use is we're trying to convert the right-of-way that we have to less flammable species. So to do this, we remove vegetation, and then we do use a cut stump treatment to prevent the regrowth. And then we're reseeding or planting beneficial species. And then we use mechanical methods like weed eating for future treatments to spot treat the areas to let the beneficial plants grow. So a good example of this is up by Cherry Lake in the Stanislaus Forest. The Cherry Ridge distribution line is within the rim fire scar. So currently I have my arborist collecting milkweed seeds that will be grown in the Sunol greenhouse. And then we're going to plant those plugs in about a year and a half to 2 years in the areas that we found those plants, and then start enhancing the area for the milkweed instead of the manzanita and the chaparral that are high fire prone species. The last thing that I'll touch on is that with the help of natural resources and land management, we are able to apply for the Monarch Butterfly Agreement, CCAA, with Fish and Wildlife. We filed it in late 2024, so we've been able to start planning areas of conservation, and this is involved with our collecting of milkweed seeds as well. And so the conservation areas, one of the methods of conservation is reduced herbicide use. So we're hoping to identify areas that potentially we can reduce the herbicide use and then use more mechanical treatments or delayed mowing or something like that to control that area. So Hetch Hetchy is looking forward to finding new and innovative ways to reduce our pesticide use. And we've got a lot more coming up in 2025, including goat contracts and even the use of chickens to micromanage landscapes. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Joy.
That's all.
We can move to the next slide. Great. On the slide, we're showing tier one herbicide use in natural areas and parks and facilities, not including golf courses. This is the Recreation and Parks Department tier one herbicide use. The parks and facilities are reflected in the solid purple line. Natural areas are reflected in the pink dotted line. You can see that there has been an overall decrease in tier one herbicide use by Recreation and Parks since 2010. Next slide, please. The Recreation and Parks Department submitted 10 pesticide use exemptions in 2024. And again, I'll remind folks that we have a full list of these exemptions as one of the documents on the webpage for this public hearing that'll be more legible. At this point, I'll ask my colleague, Matt Pruitt, representing the Department of Recreation and Parks, to take it from here.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Shoba. So, Rec and Park is very unique in that we have a lot of variety with what we take care of. We take care of different facilities such as buildings like rec centers and pools and to golf courses, to parks, to we have Camp Mather up in near Hetch Hetchy and a large natural area system. So we do have a variety of things. We have a variety of pests to deal with. And the number one way that we deal with pests is through prevention. One way is to participate in the plan review process. And that's where we can identify and correct potential pest issues during that time, such as rodent exclusion or weed prevention, like bird exclusion as well. Another way that we do prevention is through our facility monitoring routes that we run. So we're constantly looking at our facilities on a regular basis through a route management system where we can look for early signs of rodents or early signs of insects and these types of things that where we can get to these and treat these areas or solve these problems before they become major infestations. And then we always do implement cultural, physical means first, biological means, as Shoba has shown the triangle, and then pesticides last. So let me get into the exemptions there. Actually, let me get into the tier, the most limited pesticides first. So we use Giant Destroyer. Giant Destroyer is a gasser that we use for rodent burrows to treat those And then we also use a product called ContraPest. It's a rat fertility product that is used to lower the population spikes in rodents, rats in particular. I kind of have a few of these, so I'm going to kind of go quickly over these. PT wasteries, which, you know, my other colleagues have spoke about as well. This is used for yellow jackets to knock them down in a public setting. It's for public safety as well as worker safety. We also use Suspend Polyzone. It's a different formulation, so treats them in a different way. Like if there's a ground nest versus a aerial nest, we can treat these the ground nests much easier with the Suspend Polyzone formulation. We can we're able to safely dig up these nests and remove them after the pesticide kicks in. And then we also use it for carpenter bees in structural wood at Camp Mather. So we have structural beams, and structural integrity needs to be managed. We use the Suspend Polyzone in only where the carpenter bees are in that structural wood. We also use Roundup Custom. Very rarely, we use it in our natural areas system. We maintain very rare areas of plants where we need a systemic herbicide, and we want to make sure that we don't have collateral damage to our desirable plants, because it doesn't have a soil activity. It binds with the soil. This product is not uptaken by roots, and it doesn't have a residual like some of our other systemic herbicides. And it's not going to cause collateral damage where we have sensitive plants, and we're using it very rarely. We're leaning towards other tier two herbicides in these cases where we can. One of those would include Vaseline. Vaseline is a triclopyr. It's tier two product. It's a selective herbicide used in sensitive habitat restoration and protection, targeting broadleaf weeds and native grassland. And also we use Turflon, which has got the same active ingredient, triclopyr, in when we're using a selective herbicide for turf grass management. Let's see, is there anything else? List. Okay, so we also have turf grass. When we have golf courses, we have a couple of fungicides that we use to protect our golf course turf, and that is Heritage and Tourney, and they're used for different types of funguses such as like pink snow mold or dollar spot. Let's see, another tier one product is Nibor D, which we use for wood protection. So we have wood destroying insects that will cause damage to structural integrity of a structure. And then we also use it in drains for things like drain flies or American cockroach that we do have. Sometimes we have outbreaks. And that's covers. Oh, we also use boric based insecticides such as in ant bait, and that's in rotation with some other products that we use, other tier two products to deal with ants or things like cockroaches. Okay, and then as far as exemptions, we had a few this last year, and one of them was quinclorac. Quinclorac was used at Lincoln Golf Course for cucuya grass that we actually manage. The most of the course is cucuya grass, but we do want to keep it out of the golf course greens because the playability is affected greatly by it. And so we usually hand pull it, physically remove it, or practices like, you know, careful in the watering mowing techniques to keep it out. But as it encroaches further, it's more difficult to keep it off the greens, and once it's on the greens, and like I said, it impacts the playability. So we wanted to create a defensible space around the greens, kind of reset a barrier, and so that's where we use quinclorac to do that. And then that was quite effective for that use. Another exemption was Termidor SC and Termidor Foam. Those are two different products, and we use them in two different locations. So we had a termite outbreak, subterranean termites, that affected the structural wood of the Angler's Lodge, as well as HEO, heavy equipment operator office. And so, you know, we did do some monitoring and found that it wasn't the structural wood. They had some mud tubes. That's an indicator of, you know, how they move. They move from the soil to the wood that way. We removed those, removed damaged wood, removed some mulch that was piled near the foundation. We did some other cultural practices. And then we use the Termidor SC, which is a foundation barrier. And so it keeps the termites from reestablishing a line between their nest and the soil to the structure itself. And then we use the Termidor Foam as a direct curative to the structural wood to keep them from further damaging wood that could be saved, basically. Another exemption was for Quicksilver Turf and Ornamental. That's for moss control. We use that at Harding Park Golf Course. We are in the process of transitioning the greens from, removing Poa annua, and which I'll speak more about in a little bit. But basically, and also during tournaments, we have to mow the grass at a very short height. And so we do get moss periodically, so we can pick it out where it's localized. But sometimes it gets too extensive following a tournament. And so we have to file for an exemption for this product, which can, reset these greens. And because the moss does interfere with the in playability of these greens and affects the ball roll. We do other things to prevent the moss itself as such things as promoting turf health, through fertility and soil moisture control. We keep the shade at a minimum, so remove nearby limbs that are causing shade, and we do periodic thatch removal and other things like that. So we do. We don't use it very often. Every now and then, we do need an exemption to get this. It's not something we want to add to the list, because we don't use it enough to do that. But it's something that we do have need for it every once in a while. Okay, so as speaking about Poa removal, Poa annua is the annual bluegrass. It's not a desired grass to have on a putting green. Bent grass is a desired grass, and this is something that we're only doing at Harding and Fleming course, where we have PGA tournaments where the facility requires a high level of play. So because the Poa annua is kind of everywhere, and so we only control it on the golf course putting greens, and this is actually gives us an advantage in some other areas where we can minimize our fungicidal use and some other uses. Fertilities is changed because the Poa is more susceptible to disease, and consequently, we have to use a plant growth regulator as well. It's Trimit, and that helps us control it, but it's not it's needs to be, it's a one mode of action, so you need to have a couple of mode of actions so you don't develop a pesticide resistance. So we want to do that by rotating in PoaCure, which is actually more, actually works a little better than the Trimit. And then, you know, there's also a nematode that attacks the Poa annua that there's, that we'd have to spray some nematicides or something to control that as well. So we eliminate that as well, the need for that by basically eliminating the Poa as much as possible in these greens. Let's see what else. Okay, so we also got an exemption for Evolve. It's a rodent fertility management product, and we require several tactics when we do an IPM. So we do trapping, we do habitat modification, we do exclusionary measures, we do all these things, you know, sanitation. Rodents are persistent. We're trying to reduce our rodenticide use overall. If we can limit it completely in some areas, we do. So this is a way for us to keep the population from spiking. Like I mentioned earlier, we have this other product called ContraPest. It's a different formulation. Rats have a selectivity of what they're going to eat. So this is just a different formulation, different type of bait, so that they may actually be more attracted to it, some more than others. So you really want to kind of rotate that and have a different, this is actually a solid versus a liquid, which is ContraPest is a liquid. So there's those differences that help get more of this this product spread around into these rat populations and limit their fertility. Another exemption was Accentra Pro. That was because it had replaced Centria IC3. It's another product. It's actually a tier 3 product, so EPA exempt. But we use it for ant colonies, treating ant colonies. Another insects that are affected by it. There's a kind of a list of insects that's effective on soft-bodied insects mainly, and ants. And then we also use it for some yellow jacket control as well when we can, to kind of keep them, you know, keep them from rebuilding their nests or whatnot. And then I have one more, I think, which is Advian WDG, speaking of ants. This is a product that has, it's an active ingredient that we have in our bait currently that we use. And conservatory flowers have a major ant issue historically. It's because it's the right conditions for these ants to thrive. You know, it has very high moisture, it's warm, and there's a lot of plants inside. So normally what we do is we release a lot of beneficials to help control these soft body insects, like I mentioned, scale, aphids, mealybugs, but ants protect those insects and they basically disrupt those beneficial insects in ecological balance within this structure that we have of these rare historical plants. So we've been combating these ants with the baits and exclusion measures. We even use Accentra Pro on them, but this is another type of formulation that allows the bait to be transferred in a different way that devastates their trails and devastates they take it back to their nests, and it controls their nests, and it's been pretty successful for the limited time that we've used it. So we did file for another exemption this year as well to trial it some more to see what we think. And I think that's all that I have to cover. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Matt. We can move to the next slide, and I'll also pass it over to Gabriel.
Cool. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Shova. So on this slide here, we're showing you Tier 1 herbicide use by the Department of Public Works. The amount of Tier 1 herbicides applied by Public Works in recent years has been very low, and they completely stopped using Tier 1 herbicides in 2022. The Department of Public Works did not submit any pesticide use exemptions in 2024, and Public Works has put a lot of hard work into reducing Tier 1 herbicide use over the years to achieve these low application levels. So now I'll turn it over to Al Hahn, who's representing the Department of Public Works to speak. So Al, whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Gabriel. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'll try to keep this short and simple. Most of all our herbicide applications are on street mediums, and street mediums, Sunset Boulevard and also Alamany, are the most troublesome for us. On Sunset Boulevard, we have sow thistle, dandelion, plantain, miner's lettuce, poison nightshade, brome grass, and bittercress. They're the one that we focus most of our applications on. The problem with Sunset is that we have had some irrigation problem there, and we are trying to fix that. And also Sunset is kind of like right in the middle of the fog belt. And so there's plenty of moisture available for the wheat to grow and thrive. On Alamany, we basically have pretty much the same type of wheat, plus the addition of Italian thistle, cheeseweed, cut wheat, crabgrass. And so both these medians are very long, spanning maybe from a mile and a half to 2 miles. So we have to use a lot of products to try to control these weeds. And in terms of using WASP-3s as a restrictive pesticide to control yellow jacket, we have had maybe about 10 yellow jacket requests in 2024. Most of these are results of calls from the public, a member of the public got stung, or one of our gardeners got stung while doing his or her gardening work. And the aerial yellow jacket aerial nest is the most problematic for us. We do all our pest control in the early morning hours between 3 to 6 a.m. So with aerial jacket, what we need to do is one person gets up on a stepladder and apply the wasp sprays to try to knock down the yellow jacket. Yellow jackets are usually inactive during the early hours, so that this person who's doing the spraying and is standing on a stepladder is doing a very dangerous and risky work. And then another person use a garbage bag right over, right underneath the yellow, the nest, and the person on top, once recognized that the yellow jacket are no longer a threat, then snip off the branch and then drop the nest right into the garbage bags, so that that's how we take care of the yellow jacket. So wasp freeze is a good knockdown product. We are looking for other alternatives. Moving ahead, we are, cognizant of the fact that, we are relying mainly on Lifeline herbicide, which we are concerned about herbicide resistance. So we are also looking for alternatives and also potentially other products with some systemic activity. And another thing that I'm looking forward to trying to implement at our operation yard is try to educate our staff and highlight that their role in trying to prevent pests, and in terms of that, you know, to improve their sanitation manners and clean up after themselves, don't leave food. And also that, you know, exclusion method that our carpenter shops and other sheet metal shops have started installing screen materials, netting against pigeons. And I also have created pest notes that I hand out to the staff. These include ants, roaches, rats, and wasps. So each month, we have a monthly newsletter, and we try to encourage people to do their role, and we highlight their efforts, so kind of give them a little gold star to keep the momentum going. And so that's all I have.
Great. Thank you all for that. So Deidre, we can go to the next slide, please. So on this slide, this is what the San Francisco International Airport's use of Tier 1 herbicides has looked like since 2010. You can see there's been an overall reduction in Tier 1 herbicide use at the airport over the last few years, with an uptick in 2024 compared to 2023, but overall still below previous levels. I'll note that the airport runways are subjected to FAA regulations, meaning that they cannot have weeds in those areas. So the airport uses herbicides in some areas to comply with these regulations. So we'll go to the next slide, please. And the airport submitted 6 pesticide exemptions in 2024, which you can see on this slide. So I'll now turn it over to Jeremy Harris, representing the airport, to take it from here. So Jeremy, whenever you're ready.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jeremy. Thank you for having me today. I'm honored to speak on behalf of the IPM team and give a brief explanation about our sustainable practices at the San Francisco International Airport. Our team at SFO is committed to the integrated pest management approach, prioritizing pest prevention by focusing on sanitation and establishing relationships with our tenants and employees to fortify teamwork and provide education on best practices. By considering environmental factors that contribute to pest infestations, the IPM team can focus on long-term prevention of pests by managing their ecosystems. This technique reduces the amount of pesticides used on airport property and the surrounding communities, creating a healthier environment for the public and wildlife around the airport. There are a few pesticides from the approved reduced risk pesticide list that are used by our staff in limited quantity when a pest threshold is reached and we're unable to maintain controllable levels with cultural, mechanical, or biological methods, as well as when worker safety is concerned. Some of the exemptions that we applied for in 2024 were for the taro baits, some max force baits. These are all for ant and roach, cockroach control. These baits are used only after proper sanitation practices are addressed, and we have them in back stock. They've been removed from the reduced pesticide list in the past, so we have them in back stock. They're used to treat these insects and rotated with other products in order to reduce pesticide resistance. Some other exemptions we applied for, the Safari 20SG. This was used to control mealybug on large, high-value interior plants in the airport, where using oils and other conventional IPM techniques is not practical, and the plant's not really movable. It's in place for decades now. The Safer brand diatomaceous earth, this is also backstock that we're using, pretty safe product, organic product in my opinion, also used on insects like ants and cockroaches. We've all but eliminated pesticide and herbicide usage in the landscape areas at SFL. Our gardeners are conscious in their landscape practices and routines, and they regularly consult with the IPM team. They utilize regenerative techniques, including sheet mulching, steaming, flaming, and water conservation practices in order to keep weeds at a manageable level. And I'll close with a big thanks to the Department of Environment. Thank you, Shoba and Gabriel, and Jerry, and everybody there at the Department of Environment for all your great work and your support. And I'd just like to express how proud I am of the work that we do at SFO to provide a diverse, equitable, and safe environment in service to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. With that, we'll go to the next slide, please. So, next we'll hear an update from the Treasure Island Development Authority, or TIDA. So TIDA did not submit any pesticide use exemptions in 2024, but I will ask Peter Somerville, representing TIDA, to take it from here. So Peter, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Gabriel. Good evening, everyone. Peter Somerville with the Treasure Island Development Authority. Just sort of a very quick overview of TIDA's sort of overall areas of responsibility when we talk about our IPM program. We manage, amongst other things, all the parks and open space across both Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island, the public open space and rights of way within the remaining kind of legacy former naval base area of Treasure Island, as well as the new permanent park system that's coming online. Across both islands and the undeveloped natural areas across Yerba Buena Island. Our jurisdiction does not extend to the Coast Guard base on the southern end of Yerba Buena Island, nor to the Department of Labor Job Corps campus in the middle of Treasure Island. The data for 2024 is very slight. We're proud of that. We're proud of continuing the citywide trend of less and less pesticide application. The majority of our applications are focused on two specific sites where we're dealing with Bermuda grass and Kikuyu grass. We've had to do some targeted applications at a couple spaces to basically just create firewalls to keep them from spreading into more planted areas. The majority of our IPM work on both islands is focused on invasives removal to protect natural habitat, natural ecosystems on Yerba Buena Island, and to protect sort of planted landscaped areas of Treasure Island from invasives. Our primary invasives across both islands are French broom, Oxalis, Erharta, among several others. Again, we use very little herbicide. Our herbicide is applied by our master landscape contractor, Rubicon Programs. We have two separate contractors that perform parks and natural areas landscape work on Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island. That's Rubicon Programs, and Habitat Potential manages a section of our natural areas. We saw less use this year than we did in past years of products overall by nature of not doing any stump paintings. In the past year, we do have to manage regrowths of eucalyptus and acacia, particularly on Yerba Buena Island. The work plan for this past year, due to some of the tenacity of our work in the previous years, did not require rounds of stump painting. So our data really only reflects the couple targeted uses of Roundup, as was mentioned by a previous speaker, one of the few good options for controlling the grasses that we have out there. With that, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Peter. So with that, we can go to next slide, please. Great. So next we'll hear from PestTech, who's the citywide pest contractor. PestTech submitted 6 pesticide use exemptions in 2024. So now I'll turn it over to Luisa Gerto from PestTech to take it away. So Luisa, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Gabriel. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, esteemed colleagues and members of the public we serve. To begin, I want to acknowledge the progress we have made on our many goals, some that exist in tension with one another. Protecting public health sustainably with reduced risk and within a specified budget takes teams like this to communicate, to bring clarity to nuance, and from my point of view, to proactively prioritize the health, safety, and quality of life for San Francisco citizens and the workforce that serves it. Having said that, most of our pesticide applications directly pertain to public health and our regulatory compliance and consist mostly of pesticide baits that are designed to be pest specific. There's some exceptions to this, and I'll go over that in detail as I take you through the exemptions for 2024. The first exemption on the top of the list is Advion Microflow. This is a product that's a different formulation of an active ingredient that we already have on the list. This is a granule insecticide bait that can be used for ants or cockroaches. It's important to have different formulations of baits so that you can entice different populations of insects to feed on the pesticide so that it works. If a pest won't eat the bait, it will not work. And again, the focus here is to use a target-specific product that has a low amount of active ingredient in it so that it specifically controls the target pest. The next one on the list is OptiGuard Ant Gel. This is an ant gel bait. Ants are, as you see, are the number one pest in California. Not maybe in San Francisco, but it is a major source of pesticide applications throughout the nation. Again, this is a different active ingredient, and a different formulation. So it's a gel bait, could have a different bait matrix. We applied for this exemption to rotate our baits to prevent pesticide resistance, but also to find the right tool at the right time for that population of insect that we're trying to control. Not all ants in San Francisco will eat the same thing. They may have preferences based on the development cycle of their colony and food sources in the area. The next one is Evolve. As my colleague from Reckon Park had mentioned, Evolve is a new formulation of rodenticide contraceptives. This is a very important tool to add to our toolkit right now, as many of the rodenticides that we have relied on previously are no longer available. Additionally, we are seeing an increasing presence of pests. At least this has been documented in nationwide research attributed to increased urbanization and climate change. So we expect to see more higher rodent populations in the future. And it's important to have tools, maybe novel tools like this that work. It's to be determined. We also applied for the next one, which is IGI carbon dioxide. It's essentially a carbon dioxide tank with a application tool for burrowing rodents. This was an important tool that to bring into our toolkit to replace the carbon monoxide generating devices that were previously used for the same purpose. The device can be used to treat Norway rats that burrow around the outside of buildings, and we're testing it now. We also applied for use of dry-on insecticide. This is an insecticidal dust that's used in wall voids and cracks and crevices, specifically for the control of biting mites. Biting mites are nest pests, and so they may infest pigeon nests or roof rat nests. And they are a very nasty bite to have. It reduces the quality of life for people that are being bitten by these things in a workplace or at home. So the product is applied where rat nests are located, where they can't be removed physically, and used to prevent an explosion of biting mites after abating a rat infestation. And the last one is a product called Nibor D. This is a product, this is a reformulation of a product that was already on the reduced risk pesticide list. It is a ready to use product with an insect growth regulator. That is like a biological pesticide, as Shoba had talked about earlier. This is for use in cracks and crevices, damp places, and drains specifically for the control of filth flies. So this is especially important in hospitals, where food is prepared for people in the hospital, and there is a risk of contamination, mechanical contamination by flies landing on food preparation surfaces. Thank you very much for your work. I hope that we continue to make progress on these goals, and keep in mind that public health and safety for people should be our number one priority. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Luis. Then we will go to the next slide, please, and pass it back to you, Shoba.
Great, thank you. Thanks very much to all the department representatives and city contractor for explaining your work. I really appreciate all that we've been learning from you and your efforts and dedication to integrated pest management. We really appreciate those who are attending this hearing and those who submitted public comments. Thank you for your participation. Again, my teammates Gabriel, Jerry, and I are the ones who implement the City of San Francisco's IPM program. Our email address is env-ipm@sfgov.org. And you can feel free to reach out to this email address with any questions or comments, and that will reach all of us on the IPM team here. I'll pass it back over to Deidre now.
Thank you, Shoba. Give me a minute. Okay, stop screen sharing. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press *3 to be added to the queue. For those already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it is your turn to speak. I will pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. Seeing no public comment in the queue, this public comment item comment on this item is closed. I thought we could proceed to item 4. Item number 4, general public comment. Members of the public may speak on matters that are relevant to pest management on city properties or properties leased from the city, but are not on today's agenda. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press *3. To be added to the queue. For those already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it's your turn to speak. I will pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. Seeing no callers in the queue, public comment on this item is closed. Shoba, is there anything that you would like to add?
No, nothing else for me to add. Thanks.
With that, we can proceed to item number 5. Item number 5, adjournment. The hearing is adjourned. The time is 6:51 p.m. Thank you for joining us.